Welcome to the Rediscover Hour on Relevant Radio, a time to explore our Catholic faith and find out about ways to share the faith with others. Help create the possibility of an encounter with the person of Jesus Christ in the lives of others by living out the call to the new evangelization and helping fellow Catholics rediscover full life in the Church. The Rediscover Hour starts now.
And welcome to the Rediscover Hour. I'm Jeff Cavins, and great to have you with us. We're talking today on this great day in the church calendar about Our Lady of Fatima. We're talking about the Blessed Virgin Mary today. I'm really looking forward to spending some time with you to talk about, from a biblical perspective, the role of Mary, as this is on the 13th of May every year. It's a very important day in our calendar. So much has happened, and particularly for us in the Twin Cities, we've got an opportunity to add one more celebration, and that is that today on Friday the 13th, we have Archbishop Hebda, and he's going to be installed. That's at 2 o'clock Central Time. If you're listening on Saturday or Sunday, you can go back and you can listen to that spectacular installation. How proud we are, how comforted we are in the Twin Cities to know that God has given us a shepherd, a wonderful shepherd to care for us spiritually and to lead us on into the next few years and introduce to us in the Twin Cities the things that we need in our lives. It should give you a great sense of certitude knowing that Jesus has taken care of his church. He's promised not to leave us alone. In fact, he even said, "I won't leave you as orphans." Orphans, well, what's an orphan? Well, an orphan is someone who has to fend for themselves. They've got to take care of themselves, food, where they're going to stay, what's going to happen in their life, care. And God says, "I'll take care of you." And he certainly has in Archbishop Bernard Hebda. And so stay tuned to Relevant Radio for all things installation on this May 13th. Hey, it's another special day, too. You know why? It's my wife's birthday. That's right. I won't tell you the age. She's younger than I am, but it's her wonderful birthday. And she's always had a birthday that reminded us of another thing on this date, which was Fatima, obviously, but also John Paul II. Something happened to John Paul II on May 13th, 1981, in Vatican Square, St. Peter's Square there, and that was he was shot on May 13th, 1981. Where were you when that happened? Do you have any recollection of where you were when you heard the news on the radio or the newspaper or somebody at the water cooler said, "You're not going to believe what just happened"? He was in the Pope Mobile on that day and going around St. Peter's Square when he was shot, and by all accounts, it should have killed him, but he was miraculously spared, and he gives credit to Our Lady of Fatima, and Fatima, of course, is over in Portugal, and Fatima became a very, very, very popular devotion in the church because clear back in 1946, on May 13th, there were some amazing apparitions that took place, and the church has granted a canonical coronation on this, Pope Pius the 12th. But on May 13th, 1946, there were three young kids that received this apparition. There was Lucia, and there was Jacinta and Francisco, and they had three secrets of Fatima. I'm not going to go into all of those today. You can Google it. You can get a book on it. It's well documented. But the point is that May 13th, 1981, when Pope John Paul II was spared from losing his life due to that bullet, he gave credit immediately. Immediately, he gives credit to Our Lady of Fatima for sparing his life. And the assassination attempt, I should say. And so May 13th, the Feast of Our Lady of Fatima, is very, very important. He followed, by the way, the footsteps of Paul VI on May 12th, 1987, to express his gratitude to the Virgin Mary for saving his life. The following day, he renewed the consecration of Pius XII to the Immaculate Heart of the Virgin. And so when you understand the role of the Virgin Mary in the life of the Church, it doesn't come as any surprise at all that she would save the life of the Pope. She would go before him in battle, as she does in our life too. So today on the show, we can talk about this a little bit. I want to also, you know, celebrate obviously the installation of Archbishop Hebda, my wife's birthday, John Paul II being spared back in 1981, and of course in 1946, May 13th, the apparitions in Portugal at Fatima. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that, but I want to take the bulk of the show to talk about the role of Our Lady. Sometimes, you know, we don't take the time just to sit back and look at scripturally, what is her role in the church today? What function does she carry out as our mother? Is she a supernatural being like God? No, she's not. She's a created being. Did she experience sin? No, she did not. Immaculately conceived. Well, how was she saved from sin? Well, she was saved from sin by an extraordinary work of Jesus and his graces from the cross. And he preserved her from sin. And, you know, there's ways of looking at that. You can say, well, she was preserved from sin. And I can say to you, I was saved by the Lord from drugs in high school. Yeah, I was. The Lord saved me from a life of drugs in high school. Now, right away, you're going to assume, well, Jeff, you took drugs in high school? I didn't say that. I said the Lord saved me from a life of drugs in high school. Truth of the matter is, I never did drugs in high school. Why? I was afraid. But I never did drugs in high school. I believe God saved me from that when I was in high school and was preparing me for the work that he had for me. And the Blessed Virgin Mary was saved from sin by a singular act of God that was extraordinary. But guess what? She's not the only one that was created without sin. She's not the only one. She's not the first. Of course, we have Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve were born with original justice. They didn't have sin in their life. Sin came as a result of the fall in Genesis chapter 3. And the Blessed Virgin Mary was saved from that. But we're going to get into all that. We're going to talk a little bit about her role as the Queen Mother in the kingdom, her advocacy on our part. And I'm going to show you something really interesting on the show today about how the Blessed Virgin Mary is the new Ark of the Covenant. That's right. And I'm going to talk about what the Ark of the Covenant's function was in the Old Testament, and then we'll take a look at her role in the New Testament. It's amazing stuff, and it's a grace. It's a gift to you. It's not something where you've got to say, well, I don't know about that, you know, or taking away from the glory of Jesus. No, you're not. You know, Jesus is sharing his glory even with you. He says if you want to share in his glory, you're going to share in his suffering. And, of course, the Blessed Virgin Mary suffered in a greater way than any of us in that she was the mother of God, Theotokos, a title that was given to her back in Ephesus, the Council of Ephesus. She's the mother of God, but she also, in becoming the mother of God and giving birth to Jesus, endured some amazing suffering. And so we're going to learn a little bit more about that today. You're listening to the Rediscover Hour. Stay with us. When we come back, we're going to talk about all things Mary on the show today. Rediscover.
This is Father Rocky with a Catechetical Minute on Relevant Radio. Are you a practicing Catholic? I sure hope so. The more you practice the faith, the better you get. Just remember that old saying, practice makes perfect. If you want to be a practicing Catholic, try to keep the five precepts of the Church. Here they are. The first precept, you shall attend Mass on Sundays and on holy days of obligation and rest from servile labor. The second precept, you shall confess your sins at least once a year. The third precept, you shall receive the sacrament of the Eucharist at least during the Easter season. The fourth precept, you shall observe the days of fasting and abstinence established by the Church. The fifth precept, you shall help to provide for the needs of the Church. This has been a Catechetical Minute. To learn more about your faith, go to relevantradio.com, keyword cat.
And welcome back to the Rediscover Hour. I'm Jeff Cavins. We're talking today on the great feast of Fatima, Our Lady of Fatima, and also the coronation or the installation of Archbishop Hebda as our new Archbishop. We're talking about Our Lady on May 13th. It's a really good day to talk about her. And I want to go back into the Bible a little bit and kind of set the stage for you. One of the things that you have to understand about biblical interpretation from a New Testament perspective is that most of the time when we take a look at teachings in the New Testament, we're not coming up with new stuff. We're looking at fulfillments. It's really fulfillments that we're looking at. And we have in the Old Testament what we would call the economy of God, and that is the plan of God. It comes from the Greek word oikonomia. That's where we get the word economy. It's the plan of God. It's our Father's plan in the Old Testament. And in that Father's plan, his household plan, there's so many wonderful, wonderful gifts, not only offices like prime minister, queen mother, priests, high priests, the Levites, of course. There's all kinds of roles, but there's also experiences like going up on Mount Sinai. And there are tangible things like the tabernacle in the Old Testament, the temple that Solomon built, the Ark of the Covenant, the Passover lamb. There's sacrifices. There's just so much in the Old Testament. And the key to understanding all of that is to fast forward and find out how Jesus fulfilled all of that. So when we talk about the role of Mary, our mother, in the New Testament, it behooves us to go back and take a look at, well, what was her role in the Old Testament, her counterpart, if you will? What is she fulfilling in the New Testament? So let's take a look at that. I want to start off by just telling you that from the beginning of the church, Mary has always held an esteemed place as the Mother of God in church history. There's no dispute there. You can argue all you want today and say, well, that's a Catholic teaching. No, it's not a Catholic teaching. That's just the teaching from the very beginning, is that she had a very esteemed role as the Mother of God and the Mother of all who believe. And her role in the kingdom of God is quite unique, as she has been given to believers as a spiritual mother who intercedes and acts as an advocate on our behalf. We know that to be true. She is, in a real way, what we are all to become, someone who is without sin and in total union with the will of God. Wouldn't you want to experience that? I do. Well, we've got a great model in our mother, the Blessed Virgin Mary. What many do not understand, however, is that the role of Mary as the Queen of Heaven is not an invention in the Catholic Church. It's not an invention of the Catholic Church, but the continuation of a role established clear back in the Hebrew Scriptures. So it's important to remember that Mary also, and I want to establish this from the beginning, Mary is a created being. The Catholic Church and myself and the bishops and the Pope Francis do not consider her to be a goddess of any kind at all. She's not. That would be blasphemous. There is only one God, and that one God is in three persons, Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. There are no other gods out there. There are false gods, but there are no other gods, and there's no other goddesses. Neither is Mary a substitute for pagan goddesses at all. It's important to remember that she's a created being, and Christians are to do what with created beings? They are to give a special veneration to created beings, but they don't worship created beings. The word for worship is used only for God and God alone. The word for worship is the word latria. Latria. It's classical theology. It's the word that describes the worship and the homage due only to an uncreated divine person. And guess what? There's only one, and that is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And so latria, worship, is reserved only for God. Now, what do we give to the Blessed Virgin Mary? Well, sometimes if you see videos of Central America or South America, and you see videos of people venerating the Virgin Mary, it might look like they are worshiping her, but I'm telling you this, that's not what the Church teaches. The Church teaches that we venerate the Blessed Virgin Mary. It's known as dulia. Latria is worshiping God. Dulia is venerating and giving honor to the excellence of a created being, like the saints. The special veneration that Christians give Mary is hyperdulia, due to her special association to Jesus. So we worship and adore God alone, and we venerate the saints with real exceptional veneration to our Blessed Virgin Mary. Now, when we look at the role of Mary, we go all the way back into the Old Testament, clear back into Genesis chapter 3. From the very beginning, the scriptures identify a woman as a key figure in the redemption of mankind, clear back in what's called the Proto-Evangelium, the first announcement of good news in Genesis 3:15. After Adam and Eve fell, God spoke to the serpent and said that there will be enmity between you, serpent, you, devil, and the woman, the woman. So we come up with this concept of the woman. And in Genesis 3:15, it speaks of the future redemption of mankind and the crushing of the enemy. And it says that it'll come through the seed of the woman. And when we come to the New Testament in John's Gospel, chapter 2 and verse 4, and we see that Jesus refers to her as woman at the wedding at Cana. In John 19 on the cross, he says to John, "Behold your mother, behold your mother." And we have a few other scriptures we're going to look at also, too. In ancient Israel, this is an interesting concept. In ancient Israel, and I'm talking about 1000 B.C., during the kingdom of David, and then Solomon and on, there was a special role for the king's mother in the Old Testament. I didn't make this up. Catholic Church didn't make this up. The Jewish community didn't make this up. This is just salvation history. You see, in the Old Testament, it was the mother of the king who held a very special office called the Geberah in Hebrew, the Geberah, the queen mother. It's an office. It's the queen mother. You know, Western culture understands that the queen of a kingdom is the wife of the king. Not so in the Near East. In the days of the Bible, the queen was understood as the mother of the king, and we see that in Solomon's life. He had 700 wives. You don't want 700 queens. So he got one queen, and that is his mother. There's only one person in Solomon's life that is unique, and that was his mother. And the mother of the king was celebrated as a unique position in relationship to the king. So you'll see, and I'll give you some scriptures here, and if you're driving and you can't write them down, come on back and you can listen to the rebroadcast and write some of these texts down. But I want to give them to you. I mean, you know, sometimes people will say, "Well, where do you Catholics come up with this, all this stuff about Mary?" I say, "Well, the Bible." I say, "Show me." So that's what we're doing. But we're telling you because you're driving right now, and I don't want you to get into an accident. 1 Kings chapter 2, verses 13 through 20. That's 1 Kings chapter 2, verses 13 through 20. Talks about how the Queen Mother was an intercessor and an advocate for the people. She was an advocate. She was the Queen Mother. She interceded for them. She was an advocate for them. They knew that they could go to the Queen Mother to speak to the king. Also, the throne room was the Supreme Court with the Queen Mother on a throne as the second most important position. You can read about it, 1 Kings chapter 2, verses 13 through 20. And also, we see another interesting thing, another interesting pattern in the Old Testament, and that is that in 1 Kings chapter 14, in verse 21, we see that when a king is mentioned in Scripture, the queen mother is frequently mentioned. So a lot of times when you hear the name of a king, the Scripture will say, "and his mother," and his mother. So this office of the queen mother, which had a throne, is called the Geberah, the office of queen mother, known as the Geberah. You can read it, 1 Kings chapter 15, 2 Kings chapter 24. In 2 Kings chapter 24, we see that the queen mother was also taken into captivity when the king was taken into captivity. And even in Jeremiah's condemnation of the king of Judah, in Jeremiah chapter 13, he also links in with the king of Judah, his mother. So they're seen as tandem. They're seen as a pair, and they work together. By the way, that's true in the New Testament too, isn't it? Right? So, what's important to realize now is that we have in the Old Testament a queen mother. So, when we are now into the New Testament and Jesus has come and established his kingdom, we have to. We must. It is crucial. It is necessary to identify who the Queen Mother is in the New Testament. Listen, you can't study the Old Testament and realize real positions and then come to the New Testament and say, well, no, Jesus doesn't fulfill that. That's not fulfilled in the New Testament. We're just going to forget about that. That drops away. We're not going to look for that anymore. You can't do that. I mean, you have no right to do that at all. So if you have a queen mother who's an advocate and an intercessor for the people in 1 Kings, then you have to ask yourself when you get to the New Testament, is there a fulfillment of this? Well, absolutely. Absolutely, there is a fulfillment of it. And that is the mother of the king in the New Testament. So let me ask you a question. Who's the king in the New Testament? Well, that's a rhetorical question. You know who it is. It's Jesus. So who's his mother? Mary. Who's the queen then? That's right. It's Mary. Mary is the mother of God. She's the mother of Jesus. You know, I've had this funny thing happen to me many times when I've talked to my great Protestant brothers and sisters who I really do love and respect. I would say, do you think Mary is the mother of God? They say, absolutely not. No way. And what they're thinking is that she created divinity out of nothing by herself. And that's not what we are teaching. But she is the mother of God. And they say, no, I don't believe that. And say, okay, let's look at this. Do you believe Jesus is God? Yes, they say. Okay. Do you believe that Mary gave birth to Jesus? Yes, they say. Then Mary's the mother of God? No, they say. Say, okay, let's go back over this again. Is Jesus God? Yeah. Did Mary give birth to him? Yeah. Is she the mother of God then? No, they say. And see, there's like a glitch there that people cannot bring themselves to admit that Mary is the mother of God. She gave birth to God, to Jesus Christ. But she's also the queen mother in the New Testament, and it's important to understand that those figures mentioned in the New Testament understand the rich background behind these rich figures in the New Testament. It's really, really very, very powerful. So if Mary is our advocate and she is the one that intercedes for us, that means we've got a tremendous gift given to us, that you can go to your mother and you can ask her for protection and prayer, and she has a heavenly influence, we'll call it. Much like your earthly mother has influence in your household, so does your heavenly mother have influence over the household of God, which is the kingdom of God here on earth and in heaven. So she is the mother of God, and she is the queen mother. She is your advocate. Now, on May 13th, 1981, when Pope John Paul II was in his Popemobile, I believe, and of course he believes, that she had a role. She had a role in his life to protect his life. Have you been to Fatima? I went over there a few years ago. Amazing. First of all, it's huge. I mean, the whole shrine is just huge. But they have a little museum that you can go into, and on display in a crown is the bullet. The bullet that was taken from John Paul II, May 13th, 1981, is on display at Fatima with his remarks of how he gives credit to his mother for saving his life. And someone will say, well, wasn't that the Lord that saved his life? Well, it all goes back to the Lord, believe me. You know, all credit goes to Jesus, and every gift that comes from Jesus and is shared with his body has his mark on it. Don't get me wrong. But Our Lady played a role that day. Very, 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 very powerful, powerful, powerful. And so that's one aspect that I wanted to share with you today for a few minutes is that Mary is a queen mother. And in the Old Testament, the queen mother was an advocate and an intercessor for the people. And today now, in John chapter 19, Jesus on the cross said to John the Beloved, he said, behold, your mother. And you know what's interesting is that most theologians will agree that what happened at the cross has universal impact. In other words, he's not just talking to John. He's talking to every believer that he's given us his mother. Isn't that a beautiful thought? I mean, think about it for a moment. He gave us everything. He suffered for us. He died for us. He rose for us. He gave us everything. And he gave us a mother. He gave us a mother. And that is a beautiful, beautiful thing. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, I want to talk to you a little bit about another role of the Virgin Mary that we find in the Old Testament that she fulfills, which might have some real bearing on your life in terms of protecting you and providing for you the things that you are really looking for deep, deep down in your heart. This is May 13th. It is Our Lady of Fatima, and it is also the installation of Archbishop Hebda. Remember to pray for Archbishop Hebda. He's got work ahead of him, and he needs our prayers and our support. You're listening to the Rediscover Hour. I'm Jeff Cavins. We'll be right back talking more about Mary today on the Rediscover Hour.
Would you like a new concrete driveway or new paver patio, or simply need a Bobcat to come to your home to tear out all your old landscaping? If so, please call Edina Landscape and Concrete. Edina Landscape and Concrete has been serving its customers for over 20 years, providing landscape and concrete installations in the Twin Cities.
I'm John Butes of Edina Landscape and Concrete. I'd like the opportunity to provide my company's services to fellow Relevant Radio listeners. We could update your entire landscape or simply install a new front sidewalk at your home.
Call John at 952-212-1607 or visit edinalandscape.com to schedule a free consultation. Or for your bigger projects, schedule a time to meet with their landscape architect. To view their work, visit edinalandscape.com or find them on Facebook. Edina Landscape and Concrete, the one-stop shop for all your outdoor construction needs.
Welcome back to the Rediscover Hour. Great day in church history, May 13th. Of course, 1946 is Our Lady of Fatima, with the three children who received those apparitions and three secrets that have been revealed. And you can go online, you can read all about those. But and it has to do with Russia, by the way. Some very fascinating stuff with Our Lady of Fatima and Russia, and how Our Lady has been consecrated to the renewal of Russia. But also on May 13th, 1981, we have the assassination attempt of St. John Paul II. And he gives credit for Our Lady of Fatima sparing his life. By the way, when we talk about Our Lady of Fatima, we're not talking about somebody different than Mary, or Our Lady of Guadalupe is now another individual. We're talking about manifestations of our mother, the names that we give her based on the work that she did in time and space, in particular places like Fatima, like Guadalupe. And down in Mexico, Our Lady of Guadalupe. Got all these, you know, we've got names for Our Lady about her function, Our Lady of Sorrows, and, you know, other names that are just, there are just so many names that it's kind of like a diadem, you know, ways of describing just how fantastic she really is. Once again, we venerate the Blessed Virgin Mary, much like you might venerate your grandpa, but we do a special veneration for her called hyperdulia. Latria is reserved only for an uncreated being, which is God. You can only worship one, and that's God. You can't worship Mary. You can't worship a saint, but you can venerate them. You can have great respect for them, and that is due them, and it's normal. It's part of the family. It's just like going into your house, and I see pictures of your mom and dad and your sisters on the wall. Well, I don't raise my voice at you and say, "How dare you? How dare you put pictures of your parents on the wall? That is sacrilege." You'd say, "Man, Jeff, get out of my house. You're crazy." Well, I might be that, but I wouldn't yell at you for having pictures of your parents on the wall. And we should not be ashamed of having images of the Blessed Virgin Mary in our home. It reminds us of our special mother and the fact that she's been given to us. Prior to the break, we were talking about how she fulfills the role of the Queen Mother in the Old Testament in 1 Kings 14:15. You see a lot of Jeremiah, you see a lot of different examples of how the Queen Mother, who had a role in the kingdom and a throne, functioned as advocate and an intercessor for the people. Well, let me share with you another beautiful role of the Blessed Virgin Mary in the New Testament. And once again, it's a fulfillment of something in the Old Testament. And I think you'll see here when I'm done that she certainly is a warrior. You know, she's one who battles. She's one that goes before us as her children. You don't want to get in the way of a mother who's trying to protect her children. Let me tell you that right now. You don't want to get in the way. She will care for her kids. She really will. She certainly cared for Jesus. So if we go back into the Old Testament, I want to first of all tell you who she is from the Old Testament, what fulfillment I'm talking about. Then let's go back and let's unravel this a little bit so you see what I'm talking about, okay? Not only is she the Queen Mother, the Geberah, but she is also the new Ark of the Covenant. That's right. She's the new Ark of the Covenant. Now, if your knowledge of the Ark of the Covenant is about as deep as Indiana Jones, you're going to want to stay tuned here because I'm going to deepen that just a little bit about the Ark of the Covenant. First of all, they've never found it, but we did. And I'll tell you how we found it in the Catholic Church, how we found the new Ark of the Covenant and what we're doing with it today. So if we go back into the Old Testament, we see in the book of Exodus that Moses went up on the mountain, right? And he received the Ten Commandments, right? He received the law, right? But he also received something else, and that is he received an image, a pattern, if you will, of heavenly worship that he could remember and bring down from the top of the mountain to the ground below and replicate. And that was the tabernacle. You see, up until the time where they came out of Egypt, took them 3 months to go from North Egypt down to Mount Sinai. They spent a year at Mount Sinai before they broke camp and went into the Promised Land. But while they were down there, they received this pattern of worship. And then Moses begins to explain to them about the tabernacle and the outer court. And then he talks about the actual sanctuary itself, where you have the holies. It's a holy place. It's a long, oblong, a squarish-looking area with some furniture in it. At the back of it, there's a cube, a square room called the Holy of Holies. And in that Holy of Holies, there is the Ark of the Covenant. Now, the Ark of the Covenant is not very big, actually. It's not very big at all, but it's made out of acacia wood, and it is covered with gold. Now, listen real carefully here. On top of the Ark of the Covenant, there are two cherubim facing each other with their wings kind of touching, you know, hovering over the top of the Ark of the Covenant. And on the top of the Ark of the Covenant, that's called the mercy seat. The mercy seat. Now, how does this play into Israel's life? Well, every year, the high priest will go once a year into the Holy of Holies and make atonement for the sins of Israel and beg for the mercy of God right there at the mercy seat, which is on top of the Ark of the Covenant. So the mercy seat, or the source of mercy for Israel, is connected to the Ark of the Covenant. You got that? But Moses was also instructed to put three things in the Ark of the Covenant. One was a copy of the Ten Commandments. Number two in the Ark of the Covenant was a bowl of manna that they had gathered, of course, every day, enough for two prior to the Sabbath, and God would provide for their needs for the 40 years of wandering in the wilderness. So we have the copy of the Ten Commandments, we got the bowl of manna, and then we also have the budding staff of Aaron, which stands for the high priestly role. Now think about it for a moment. Inside the Ark of the Covenant is the Word of God, the bread given by God, and a sign of the high priestly role. That's going to be really important in just a moment here, okay? So that's what you have in the Ark of the Covenant. Now, Israel, of course, wandered around in the wilderness for 40 years, and then they ended up taking the Promised Land in the book of Joshua. Then they went through the period of the judges, and then they asked for a king. They asked for a king. And they ended up with Saul from the tribe of Benjamin, and he ruled for 40 years, but he was disobedient twice. The kingdom was ripped from him, 1 Samuel 13:13, ripped from him, given to a son of Jesse from Bethlehem by the name of David. David got an idea in his head that he wanted to build a permanent sanctuary, no longer a tent that traveled around, but he wanted a permanent sanctuary. So in 2 Samuel 7, he comes up with the idea that I'm going to build you, God, a permanent place. And God said, you can't because there's blood on your hands, but your son Solomon will. And so Solomon, the third king of Israel, is the one who builds this permanent place for God in Jerusalem. You ever seen those pictures of the golden dome in Jerusalem, the Dome of the Rock, the Muslim Dome of the Rock? Well, that's where the temple was that Solomon built. And in the Holy of Holies went the Ark of the Covenant. Powerful, huh? Very, very powerful. Well, you say, Jeff, now why would Mary be the new Ark of the Covenant? Why would she be the new Ark of the Covenant? Well, stay with me here and I'll explain, because it's very, very interesting. In 2 Samuel chapter 6, 2 Samuel chapter 6, we see that David is going to bring the Ark of the Covenant into Jerusalem. He's going to bring the Ark of the Covenant into Jerusalem. And when he brings the Ark of the Covenant into Jerusalem, he says some peculiar phrases. Now, he says, for example, how is it that the Ark of the Lord has come to me? And he also, it says that David went up into the hill countries of Judea. And it says he danced before the ark with all of his might. And the ark stayed at the house of Obed-Edom on the way for 3 months. Well, when we come to the New Testament, we have an uncanny parallel between Samuel and Luke chapter 1 when the Blessed Virgin Mary comes to visit Elizabeth. Now, Mary is the new Ark of the Covenant. Think with me for a moment. Think. What came out of the Blessed Virgin Mary? The Word of God. What was in the Ark of the Covenant? A copy of the Ten Commandments. What came out of the Blessed Virgin Mary? The Eucharist. What was in the Ark of the Covenant in the Old Testament? The bread. And so the third thing is, what came out of the womb of the Blessed Virgin Mary? The great high priest, Jesus Christ. What was before the Ark in the Old Testament? Aaron's budding staff, a sign of his high priestly role. You see, the three things that were in the Ark in the Old Testament have come out of the Blessed Virgin Mary now. But I want to share one more thing about this with you that is really, really interesting. And a lot of people do not see this. And oftentimes you won't even read about it in commentaries. And that is this. Let's go back to the Old Testament for a moment. The Ark is in the Holy of Holies in Solomon's temple, and this is about 900 BC. The Babylonians are going to come down into the south, and they're going to destroy Judah. The 10 tribes to the north have already been destroyed by the Assyrians in 722. In 587 BC, the Babylonians are going to come down into the south, and they're going to destroy Judah and Benjamin and take them away. But Jeremiah the prophet is concerned about something. He's concerned about the Ark of the Covenant, the most precious piece of furniture in Israel's worship. And so you can read about this in 2 Maccabees chapter 2. Jeremiah takes a few of the pieces of furniture along with the Ark, and he takes it out of the Holy of Holies and brings it out and hides it in a cave. Why? Because they didn't want the Babylonians to make unclean the ark. In other words, Jeremiah preserved the ark from destruction. Did you get that? This ties right in with the Immaculate Conception and Mary being saved from the stain of sin. Jeremiah took that ark and he put it in a cave, and one guy standing by said, you know what we should do here, Jeremiah? We should put a marker here. We should put a marker here so that when we come back after 70 years in exile in Babylon, we'll know where to go to get this, this ark, and we'll put it back in its rightful place in the Holy of Holies. And Jeremiah said, no, 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 no. This place shall remain a mystery until God has gathered his people and shows forth his mercy. You get that? Jeremiah said, no, we're not going to put a marker here. It's going to remain a mystery until when? Until God gathers his people again and shows forth his mercy. That is an amazing thing. So the last place we see the ark in the Old Testament was in a cave. They hid it in a cave. And when Israel came back from Babylon, there is no record at all that they went and got the ark and put it in its rightful place. In fact, it looks like the Holy of Holies is empty. And this seems to be what Jesus is saying in Matthew chapter 21, chapter 23, when he stands on the Mount of Olives and he looks at the temple and he says, oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that stoned the prophets, how often I would have gathered you around me, like a hen gathers chicks under the wings, but you would not. Behold, your house is empty and desolate. Now it is empty and desolate because the ark isn't there, but I got an idea here. I think I know where the ark went. Do you remember in the Old Testament when Jeremiah hid it? Where did he hide it? He hid it in a cave. Where do we see it next? In a cave. In a cave. Think about it for a moment, my friend. Think about it. When the Blessed Virgin Mary gave birth to Jesus, where does she give birth to Jesus? Not in a hotel. All the inns were full. They went to a stable. Now, if you've been to Bethlehem, you'll know, and I go to Bethlehem every year. I lead a pilgrimage there every year, and we go to these caves outside of Bethlehem. That's where the shepherds held their sheep. And that's where the manger would have been, is back underneath one of these caves. And so we see that the next time we see the Ark of the Covenant after Jeremiah hid it, was we see in Bethlehem the Blessed Virgin Mary giving birth to Jesus in a cave. The Ark of the Covenant has been found in a cave. It's the Blessed Virgin Mary. And here's what's even more remarkable in some ways. Do you remember what Jeremiah said? He said, no, we're not going to mark this place. It's going to remain hidden, a mystery, until God has gathered his people and shows forth his mercy. Do you know that the word mercy and the word womb are the same root, rechem. Rechem and rechemim. It's the same root. Out of the womb of the Blessed Virgin Mary comes mercy. They're connected, you see? Mercy is connected between Jesus and Mary, just like the mercy seat in the Old Testament was connected between the presence of God and the mercy of God on that seat. It's amazing. And so we understand now that the Blessed Virgin Mary is the new Ark of the Covenant. Now, I didn't come up with that. That's been church teaching from the beginning. And Luke tries to get that across to you in Luke chapter 1 at the visitation. We see the exact same wording as David bringing the ark into Jerusalem. The same wording. David brings the ark into Jerusalem. Mary makes her visitation to Elizabeth in Jerusalem. Same wording. They both went up into the hill countries of Judea. They both said, how is it that the ark of the Lord has come to me, David? Elizabeth, how is it that the mother of my Lord has come to me? David danced before the ark. And the child, John the Baptist, in Elizabeth, leaps for joy when Mary, the new Ark of the Covenant, comes into her presence. Amazing! The Ark of the Covenant stayed at the house of Obed-Edom for 3 months in the Old Testament. Mary stays with Elizabeth for 3 months. You tell me that's a coincidence? I don't think so. Now, maybe you say, well, Jeff, I'm not sure about that. Well, let's listen to what John said then. Because John, in his great revelation, he keeps going from earth to heaven, earth to heaven, earth to heaven. And in one place in chapter 11, he's looking into heaven in John, in Revelation 11:19, and he says, then God's temple in heaven was opened, and the Ark of the Covenant was seen within his temple. And then he describes it. a great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars. He describes the Ark of the Covenant as a woman. But you've heard this description before. I know you have. You say, where have I heard that before? That sounds so familiar. I'll give you a hint. Our Lady of Guadalupe. That's the exact description of Our Lady of Guadalupe, the Ark of the Covenant that John saw in heaven. Another manifestation of the Blessed Virgin Mary. Our Lady of Fatima was one. Our Lady of Guadalupe is another. Amazing. So we see the ongoing participation of the Blessed Virgin Mary, the new Queen Mother, the new Ark of the Covenant, the new Advocate, the new Intercessor in your life. I saw a bumper sticker not too long ago, and I want to talk about this in just a little bit. It had a great line on the bumper sticker. You know what it said? It said, "Your mother has not heard from you in decades." Isn't that true? You know, so some of us, you say, well, I'm Catholic. I believe in Mary and I believe in Jesus and the saints and everything, but we don't live like it. If you've been given this tremendous gift by Jesus, do you receive a mother who is an advocate and an intercessor and the new Ark of the Covenant? And if you don't take advantage of that, you're missing out on a whole lot of firepower here. Because the Ark of the Covenant, guess what the Ark of the Covenant did in the Old Testament? It went before Israel in battle. Your mother goes before you, you know. She wants to fight the battle you're in right now. What are you going through right now? What are you going through in terms of your family and your children? You got teenagers? Oh man, do you need the Ark of the Covenant? You need an intercessor. You need an advocate. If you got teenagers, listen, pull over on the side of the road and commit yourself to a new relationship with Our Lady, a gift from Jesus. This is really, really important. What's your health situation right now? What about your emotions, your finances, your money? When the Blessed Virgin Mary went to a wedding in John chapter 2, she said one line. She said to her son, she said, "Son, they have no more wine." And he said, "What do I have to do with you, woman? My time has not yet come." And he provided that wine. But St. John Paul II, in his great writing on the Blessed Virgin Mary, he said, "At that point, we realized that God had given us a new mother in the spiritual order, and that she cares about your wants and your needs and your desires and your fears, and she brings all of this to Jesus. She brings all of it to Jesus." And so today, May 13th, Our Lady of Fatima, don't let it just go by. If it's Saturday or Sunday, you can still do the same thing. Renew yourself. Consecrate yourself. You've got a team here. You've got a mother that loves you so much. She's a great example. She will be there at your cross. She was there at the cross of Jesus. She wants to be at the foot of your cross too. Don't squander this opportunity. It's a great day. It's a great day. And you know, in the rosary, let me just say something about that for just a couple of minutes before we break, and that is the rosary is a great gift for you. It really, really is. It's a gift that really comes out of that whole 13th century, you know, 1220, 1221, St. Dominic, that whole group. Tremendous. You know, the tradition is that Our Lady gave the rosary to St. Dominic to combat what? Well, to combat heresy. And that he would go into villages and he would preach to them the mysteries of salvation, and then he would pray Hail Marys. And the rosary was developed over the years until 1569, when St. Pius V officially approved the current form. But the rosary is an incarnational prayer, and it consists of both vocal and mental prayer, and incorporates both body and soul. The beautiful thing about it is that it is like a, what would you say? It's like a tour of the life of Jesus led by Mary, and she prays with you as you look at the whole life of Jesus through the glorious, you know, from the joyful all the way through to the glorious. It's about Jesus, but you got your mother taking you on this tour and walking with you throughout it. One of the beautiful things about the rosary is that you can be sitting in the car, you can be sitting in the entryway of a hospital, waiting room, You can be on back porch, you can go fishing, whatever. And the minute you say, you know, I believe in God the Father Almighty, and you start the prayers of the rosary, you create what I would like to call, and Abraham Joshua Heschel, the great Jewish philosopher, once said, not about the rosary, but just about prayer, is that you create a temple in time. You create a place to go into where you can just be with God, and the Blessed Virgin Mary will walk through it with you. So once again, it's a great day today. Pray for Archbishop Hebda. Installation takes place today, 2 o'clock Central Time. And it's the anniversary of Our Lady of Fatima. It's also the anniversary of St. John Paul II being shot at St. Peter's Square. And it's my wife's birthday. So congratulations. Great day in church history. We'll be back right now in just a moment just to talk about a few more things happening here in the Twin Cities. You're listening to the Rediscover Hour.
Over the course of a life of a business, its growth and success are often the direct result of hard work and dedication. Managers and business owners spend a great deal of time positioning a business in the marketplace to ensure they're in the right position, take advantage of opportunities and market conditions.
I'm Larry Loinger of LCI Consulting. If internal and external safety of your business technology is keeping you awake at night, you should be in touch with our company. All of your company's hard work and data may be vulnerable to attack, completely derailing your growth and success. Our local technology experts can work directly with you to protect and preserve systems that make your company work.
LCI Consulting in the Twin Cities helps small to large companies keep pace with technology and vulnerabilities that can affect your future. For expert technology management, call 763-425-7567.
Call us at LCI to have our technology experts working for you. 763-425-7567. LCI is proud to sponsor and support Relevant Radio and our Catholic communities in the Twin Cities.
Welcome back to the Rediscover Hour. Today, Archbishop Hebda, installation 2 p.m. Paul Sadek joins me because there's just too much for me to talk about. Too many things happening in the Twin Cities.
Tons of things going on. If you're listening Friday, it's not too late to get some great bargains at the annual Council of Catholic Women garage sale. It's at Transfiguration Catholic Church in Oakdale. Sale runs today from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Tomorrow, Saturday, May 14th, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. For more information, visit transfigurationmn.org. Click on News and Events.
Holy Spirit Academy is holding their annual Fit for Life 5K on Saturday, May 21st on the campus of St. Henry's in Monticello. Run, walk, skip, or dance your way to the finish line. All ages and abilities are welcome, so gather the family and come to Out for a Fun Day of Faith and Fitness. Big mouthful there. Mass begins at 8 a.m. with the kids, 1K beginning at 9:30 a.m. and the 5K at 10 a.m. To register, go to www.hsfitforlife.com.
Are you interested in learning about the Secular Franciscan Order? It's a lay order of Catholic men and women aspiring to follow the way of St. Francis. If so, join us at 1:30 any third Sunday of the month at the Catholic Charities Building in Minneapolis. Off-street parking available. For questions, call MJ 952-922-5523.
Father Joseph Gillespie invites you to St. Albert the Great Parish to join in a delightful concert series of summertime jazz, beginning with Maud Hickson and Rick Carlson on Sunday, May 22nd at 1 p.m. The cost is $15 at the door, and this May 22nd concert will celebrate Louis Armstrong and feature songs Louis sang.
Young ladies entering 7th or 8th grade are invited to explore camping, hiking, and how great it is to be a girl at the 2016 Gooseberry Ladies Retreat, August 1st through the 5th. We'll attend daily Mass at the Catholic Church in Two Harbors or Silver Bay, learn to have personal prayer time each day, and have an experience of Eucharistic adoration. Early bird pricing ends May 23rd, final registration June 30th. Register online by visiting idretreats.org and click on ID Retreats.
The 2016 Archdiocesan Prayer Vigil to the Sacred Heart of Jesus is a time of prayer, penance, and healing for our archdiocese and our priests. Join us at St. Peter's Catholic Church in Mendota Thursday, June 2nd through Friday, June 3rd. There will be time for Eucharistic adoration, reflections, and devotions throughout the vigil. The vigil begins with solemn vespers at 7 p.m. and concludes at 7 p.m. on Friday, June 3rd with a solemn High Mass. For more information, visit the events page on www.archspm.org.
And best-selling author and speaker Father Michael Gately will lead a Mercy and Mary weekend retreat at the University of St. Thomas, June 10th through the 12th. For more information, visit the events page at archspm.org. And what do we have coming up next week, Jeff?
Well, join us next week as we talk with Father Markaviches from the seminary. He's going to provide us with a better understanding of the liturgical year. Father Markaviches is the instructor of liturgical theology and homiletics at the St. Paul Seminary School of Divinity. And he'll be on the air to teach us about the six seasons which make us a Christian year, a complete Christian year, including Advent, Christmas, Lent, Sacred Triduum, Easter, and Ordinary Time. So it's going to be good. It's going to be better than you think. It's going to be a full year of Jesus.
The Rediscover Hour is heard every Friday morning at 9, Saturday evening at 6, and Sunday morning at 9 on Relevant Radio 1330. You can find show audio archives at rediscover-faith.org and at relevantradio.com. Keyword, rediscover. The Rediscover Hour is a production of the Archdiocese of St. Paul in Minneapolis in cooperation with Relevant Radio. Rediscover.